And we are very lucky to have with us this morning, live in our studios, Bev Harris, who is author of the upcoming book, Black Box Voting, Ballot Tampering in the 21st Century. Bev, thank you for coming in this morning.
Well, it's great to see you.
Let me ask you, how did you get motivated to write the book, Black Box Voting?
Actually, I read someone else's article, and the title of the article was intriguing. It said, "Assume Crooks Are in Control." And the gist of the article was that we didn't know who it was that really owned our voting machine companies. And I have access and subscriptions to some databases, and I thought, well, I was on my lunch hour. I guess I'll just go look and find out who does own these companies. And within 30 minutes, I found answers that were very disturbing and needed to get some sunlight on them. And it kind of spun from there. I put something on my website, and kind of all heck broke loose.
So tell us quickly, who does own those companies? What are we looking at?
Well, the first one that I found, what concerned me was that we had Senator Chuck Hagel, who actually ran for office twice, while the only machines that counted his votes were the ones that were built and programmed by a company that he had ownership in and had been the CEO and chairman of.
That seems somewhat questionable. Was there... did anybody look into that? Question about that?
Interesting. Well, I posted the information and I posted the documents on the site, and it took a while for the mainstream media to really pick up on the story, but they did in January this year. Again, some really dramatic things happened. We had a publication called The Hill from Washington, D.C. It's a very mainstream, nonpartisan congressional publication. Alex Bolton from The Hill decided to tackle it and see what he could find. In the course of his uncovering the story, or really verifying the documents that I had given him, the Senate Ethics Committee director resigned within an hour of meeting with Chuck Hagel. He had already spoken to Alex Bolton of The Hill and had said, this is the Senate Ethics director, had said that it looked like there were ethics violations here. Hagel's people came in and met with him. He then resigned, and they put a new spokesman in place who said, well, maybe there were no ethics violations, but there clearly were. You can really talk to any SEC attorney, and the problem is that Senator Hagel has ownership, had positions, and failed to disclose them, and it's not a gray area. It specifically says he has to disclose them.
Yeah, and especially connections like that. Now, isn't he a contender for a presidential race, potentially?
He has taken out the domain names Hagel2008.com and ChuckHagel2008.com, and he granted an interview with AP Wire Service indicating that he felt he was qualified to become a contender for the presidency in 2008.
Now, I know the writer at The Hill got some pressure about writing the article about that subject. Have you received any pressure from your coverage of it?
Yeah, I got a letter from ESNS, which is the company that Hagel's involved with, demanding that I take everything off my website or else. There hasn't been any follow-up from them to that yet, and... the letter that they sent was actually quite ridiculous. It was saying, basically, I can report the facts, but if it puts them in a bad light, I need to take it off my website.
Well, that would certainly shut down a lot of places. So, moving along, there is, recently, this last couple of weeks, you've been breaking multiple news stories about what I think is a really good example of what is wrong with our ballot system, and it happens in Georgia. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it happened in Georgia, and I've discovered that the same company, and actually the same weaknesses, it looks like, this company produces machines for 30 states and actually produces the machines for King County. But in Georgia, they have the entire state bought companies from Diebold Election Systems, which used to be Global Election Systems, and the machines are called AccuVote. And they bought these new machines that don't have a paper trail, the touch screen that you can't ever verify or audit the vote. The entire state bought the same type of machines. Well, it turns out that the programmers from Diebold Election Systems had been parking very sensitive files on a public website that anybody could go to. And these files were an open invitation to vote rigging, frankly. And they disturbingly included a file called Rob Georgia. Now, when we saw this file, because I actually found this site on Google. It had been reported to me by some whistleblowers, but I was looking for something else, walked right in the front door. There's this file called Rob Georgia, and I thought, well, is Rob a name or a verb? I'm not quite sure what this means. Inside the file that said Rob Georgia were files that said to replace the files in the vote counting program with these files, and to run a program on Windows and replace it with these, which is what you'd call a patch. There's legitimate reasons to do a patch. The problem in this case is that nobody certified this patch, and nobody ever looked at what was on the patch. And indeed, the patch was put on all 22,000 machines in Georgia without anybody ever looking at what the patch contained and did it have any malicious code. But it gets worse than that, because they were sending teams of technicians all around the state with these little cards that invoked a program. They were driving all over Georgia for a month, 20 different teams of technicians, and there appeared to be no security on who could make cards like this. Could they download files like Rob Georgia and stick them on the cards and reboot with those things? So nobody knew what was on it, and nobody really kept a real close chain of custody on who created it or if people could substitute it. And basically, nobody knew by the time of the election what programs were on those machines. It's a very serious situation.
So in your investigations, you ended up talking to a lot of people. What was Diebold's response to what you've just told us?
Diebold's response to the parking the sensitive company files on an open website is that they were never used for anything, which I thought was odd because there are something like 2,000 files parked there, and they've been using it for over 7 years. The most recent file was put there on January 16th this year. So if they're not using it, why are they there? Diebold didn't have any response, didn't claim any, claimed not to know anything about this Rob Georgia folder. I found another folder targeted to Georgia with very similar replacement files on it. And they admitted that they have been parking these files on this completely unprotected site, and they indicated that they have since decided to put some protection on it.
Well, good for them. But you started asking the state of Georgia and people involved in this, you know, why didn't any red flags pop up when these teams of 20 or 20 different teams start showing up and modifying these machines? What's the deal with that?
You know, what you find every time you ask questions in this state or in Georgia is they say, well, these machines have been tested and tested and tested again, and nothing could happen. So there were four levels of testing they said they went through, so I called someone, an official at each level of testing, and it turned out that the first level, they said, which was the state secretary of state's office, never looks at the code, so I guess it was just three testings, right? Well, the next level was an independent examiner from the state, a very nice gentleman. He said he didn't ever look at the code or test it because someone else did. And so I guess there was just two levels. So I contacted a lab called Wiley Laboratories, which was supposed to do the testing, and they said, well, they decided they didn't need to look at the patch because they didn't handle software certification. They had stopped doing that for voting machine companies in 1996. Now, that's interesting because companies like ESNS on their website list Wiley Laboratories as their certifier and say it's a very big company and that's why you can trust us. Well, Wiley Laboratories doesn't ever look at their software. They quit doing that in 1996. So the last company in the chain, we're not allowed to talk to them. It's a rule. The only person who is a guy who doesn't have any background in this type of programming, and he refused to answer my questions and hung up on me, so I obtained an actual lab report from this company. It's the only company now. We're down to one place that ever looked at this. The lab report indicates that they did not do a line-by-line testing. They never looked at the source code even originally. In fact, the program itself, the original program that went on the machines, apparently has not been examined by any human eye. The patch was never examined by anybody. It's stunning. This was admitted by people at every single level in the food chain, including the company and including the Secretary of State's Office of Georgia.
And when you, and as you pointed out, when you're asking these questions afterwards, after this has come to light, and they're just all blowing you off.
They first were taking my calls, and then when they realized that I was going to ask them about what... Now, what I'm simply asking is what security protections were in place to see that nobody could tamper, especially in view of the fact we have a folder called Rob Georgia that's on a public website, which contains the original source codes that anybody could download. And as soon as you get into any discussion of what security is in place, they say that we're not going to discuss the possibility of tampering. Now, if I make an ATM machine and I say to the bank, I'm not going to discuss whether anyone can break into this thing, they'll laugh me out of the office. Nobody's going to buy that ATM machine because it's part of the deal. Same thing with a slot machine. If the guy says, well, you know, tell me, you know, you're sure these can't be rigged. Show me how you know they can't be rigged. And you say, well, I'm not going to talk about that. I mean, the response I'm getting from both the voting machine companies and the Secretary of State's office is, they've taken the discussion of tampering off the table. Well, we have to know what the security is. That's our right as citizens. And it turns out when we really look at it that there is no security and that nobody has even looked carefully at the codes that actually run these machines.
And you bring up ATM machines. Doesn't Diebold produce ATM machines as well?
It does. Diebold is... It just bought this election company, and so everybody talks about them as Diebold machines, but it actually was Global Election Systems, and they didn't change any of the management. It's the same machines. It's the same software that was used before. And, in fact, they didn't even relocate any of the management. So there's this company over in Texas, and then there's Diebold in Ohio. Either Diebold is awfully lax, which I doubt because they do make ATM machines, or they are absolutely squirming right now. They've got to be just horrified when they see these kinds of security flaws.
So aren't there any entities out there that require that the source code has to be checked by human eyes? I mean, what do we fall back on here?
They keep coming back to one thing. They say logic and accuracy test. We do logic and accuracy test. What that means, in essence, it's called black box testing, by the way. It just simply means you run some pretend ballots through the machine, and if it counts those right, everything's good. There are a few other logic and accuracy tests they do, but they do not involve looking at the source code, which what we need to do is, and actually the programmers tell me it's even worse than that, because the source code can interact with video cards and it gets really complicated. The compiler itself can do things and it interacts with the operating system, the Windows system. So it needs to be somebody that looks at the entire system and how each component interacts, because at any level you can have malicious code inserted. But we don't ever do that anyway. What they do is they run these sample ballots through and call it good. And we know that doesn't work because I was able to uncover over 5 dozen examples of situations where the elections had been seriously miscounted. In many cases, the machines handed it over to the wrong candidate, and it wasn't a close race. In a couple of cases, I found it had 100% error. All the yeses registered as no, and all the noes registered as yes. We have places where 41,000 votes just get missed. Now, if a logic and accuracy test worked, even if it was working to see if they were accurate, it wouldn't work. I mean, obviously it's not working, but nobody who's a computer programmer thinks that you can do a logic and accuracy test to test for fraud or tampering. It's not possible. It doesn't test that.
Well, I know, having worked for a software company myself, that testing the code is pretty key. They put a lot of energy into that, as well as just having a feedback mechanism for once a product goes out to market. They have like extra people brought in to just for the problems that come in after something is being used.
Sure, because there's going to be bugs when you have a new software system.
That's just a given.
Yeah.
So, getting back to Diebold's situation, did you get a sense for how often these patches, like the one that they did in Georgia at the last minute, are happening to their systems?
It seems to be part of the deal. I talked to some people in Washington, and one of the election supervisors, a really nice lady, but she said that, well, we get a CD in the mail, doesn't have any instructions, and we're supposed to put it in the machine, and it just, we run setup, and it overwrites the other program. And I said, well... So I called the Secretary of State's office in Washington, and I said, well, what controls do you have on these CDs that the election supervisors are getting in the mail and running on their computer with no instructions? And he said, it's not an issue. And all I could respond to that is, I don't understand why it's not an issue. Does anybody check these things? And he said, well, the manufacturer is supposed to tell us. And essentially, here's the only control they have. If they hear about it, then they ask someone on the telephone what it does. And if it sounds pretty good, they don't ever look at it. Nobody looks at the code on these updates. And I think that has probably got to be the simplest way anybody could rig an entire state.
So it sounds like there's no checks at all, like, let's say, random drug searches. There's no checks at all that we have out there for just popping into any given state or county or city and looking at this stuff from time to time. I mean, you think after Florida, this might be on the radar. It might not be in the center of the radar, but it might be somewhere on it.
Well, now, there are a couple states. Washington's got one of the somewhat better laws in that you can, right after the election, a candidate can have a spot check done, and they can compare the paper trail with the count in up to three precincts per county. It's still not adequate, but it's much better than most states, which absolutely forbid people from looking at the paper trail, even when there's a recount. That is unfathomable. But it seems that we have sort of fallen into this system, and everybody tells us they're tested and tested and tested. Well, if you discover they're not actually tested at all, in terms of a human eye looking at every line of code and the whole system to see how it integrates, then the whole system literally comes tumbling down. We don't have any way of knowing if our votes were counted the way we cast them.
I want to ask you a little bit about solutions for this, because I know that you've come across many good solutions. But I'm wondering about getting back to this lab. There's two big labs, I think, that were in
charge of something. There's one lab that tests the hardware and firmware. And they do things like drop it off a truck or see if it works in the rain or whatever, you know, or if you can leave it in the rain and it still works. The other lab tests the software. The software seems to have been kicked from lab to lab to lab. There was a lab in 92 that was set up to test it, and I talked to the owner of that lab. He said he actually pulled out of the business because it was ESNS that was the problem. He said they refused to allow him to really look at their code, and they would only allow him to do what's called the black box testing, which is sort of the you can't see what's inside, but just run a couple ballots through and see if it works. He said he couldn't put his name on it because he certified naval vessels and so forth, and he couldn't do the right type of testing. Then it went to Wiley Laboratories, and it went from Wiley, who decided that they refused to test it anymore after 1996. They didn't give a reason. Went from them to Nichols Research, and it went from them to PSINet, and it went from them to Metamore, and most recently it's gone to Cyber, C-I-B-E-R. Interestingly enough, all these different labs that it's kicked over to, it seems to be the same, I don't know, five guys or whatever, all in the same building in the same city. So it just seems like different companies come in and acquire it, and then they pass it off to the next company. There's another lab that has been certified to do the software testing, but I can't find any of the major companies that use them. So the key people we're looking at are called Wiley Laboratories, which doesn't look at the software, and a company called Cyber, which we're not allowed to talk to.
Okay. Now, the term black box testing is for the just seeing if it comes out with a count, right? And then white box testing, that is?
White box testing would be the looking at the source code and really getting in and making sure that the code itself doesn't have anything that would run a hidden program in the background, for example.
All right. And you said since 1996, these main players aren't looking at the source code anymore. Have they given a solid reason for that?
Actually, the only reason given by Wiley Laboratories is that the code became very, very cumbersome and difficult to test. They said it was, and this is for the optical scan machines, by the way, which are relatively simple. They just are a tabulation program. And they said that the code had made its way up to, it's something on the level of 900,000 lines of code for a simple optical scan machine. And so they said it was too hard and too cumbersome to do it anymore. That's the official reason. The programmers I talked to think it's ridiculous that an optical scan machine would have 900,000 lines of code in a simple tabulation program. And I don't know if that's true. That's the reason they gave.
And I assume there's fees paid for these people to do the testing.
Mm-hmm.
So how do they justify their getting these fees if they aren't really testing the code? I wonder.
This is the area that I think will be shaking out in the next couple of months, who is actually involved in certifying the certifiers and who checks to see what's done, and what are the controls at that top level? Because that seems to be where it's falling apart. Well, it's falling apart all the way up the line, but the top level is where you got to go. The amazing thing is they pay fees to these companies. The public is not allowed to know what tests they do. But that being said, whistleblowers are emerging from a few different sources who have actually worked in the companies, in some cases worked in the labs themselves. And that's why we know that it apparently, although they won't say what they do or don't do, apparently the testing they do is limited to what's called pattern recognition, where they run a machine over the code, never look at it with their own eyes, and it just checks for certain patterns. And all you can do is load in a certain number of patterns and see if it, you know, finds those things. The number of ways that you can manipulate these codes to tamper with these things, it's not 10 ways or 20 ways. It's hundreds and hundreds of ways. Just go to McAfee.com and look at all the viruses that have ever been created in the last 10 years and put an incentive around that somebody might be willing to pay you $2 or $3 million to create such a thing. And you'll see that it's just not acceptable to say, we're just going to see if it checks this. Well, you can run your Word document. It might type some words in it. That doesn't mean that you don't have a virus running in the background.
Right. And I can tell you from my experience that the bulk of those viruses up on McAfee's site were actually written by people just doing it for fun.
Right.
So when that's amusement, you know, you got to really wonder about our voting systems. So what has been the response in Georgia about this?
Citizens are outraged. Now, the Secretary of State keeps saying it's not a problem because we did this logic and accuracy test. And the reason I keep bringing up this boring topic is that is a talking point which is used, and it's going to be used again and again until the public just rejects it. Logic and accuracy test, LNA test, means you put some ballots through, see if it counts right. We already know they don't count right in many instances. You can't ever tell if they count right if there's no paper trail. It's not going to catch fraud. So, you know, taking that aside, the citizens are upset. One of the most interesting movements afoot that I've seen there, and I'm really watching this, how this plays out over the next couple of months, is some citizens got together and decided, well, you know, what can we do? It looks like what they're doing is rounding up people in all 159 counties to file individual lawsuits against their county commissioners. Therefore, the plaintiff and the defendant would be different in each case, and the lawsuit would be slightly different in each case. But they're rounding up a few attorneys who are volunteering to do this pro bono, by the way, who are developing sort of templates which can be adjusted for each individual case. Then they're looking at having at least 150 lawsuits filed essentially at the same time in all different localities under different jurisdictions by different people. So they can't all be dismissed at once. And most likely, not all the judges will look at it the same way. And when they do something like this, it's really going to force people to say, okay, we need to correct the system. We need to put the safeguards in place for the next time.
And what would you recommend to people here in King County? You told us the Diebold systems are used here, too.
Right. We use the ones that do have a paper trail. They're called AccuVote optical scan systems. We've had some significant problems, by the way. We had an election that had all kinds of strange things happening with the programming itself. I believe it was 1998, where, you know, votes were disappearing and appearing and things weren't adding up, and they lost 14,000 votes here and so forth. So there were problems. But it's really four things, and the amazing thing is they're free and they're not very difficult to do, and so we really can't understand why there's any resistance at all to any of these things. And the great thing is you can say each one of them in a short sentence, and you can end each of the sentence with a three-letter word, duh. And the words would simply be, you know, the first one is be able to look at a voter verified paper audit trail. In other words, have ballots that the voter says, yep, this is what I did, and drops in a ballot box. It's fine to have it looked at by a machine, but have a voter verified paper trail, duh. And the next one is actually look at the trail to see if it matches the machine counts. Now that's going to be the thing that is not done, because you'll find in almost all states it's forbidden to look at that trail. It should be not only should it not be forbidden, it should be widely available to a number of different people, obviously with controls. For example, at any precinct, if they decide they want to look and see if it matches the machine counts, the election officials ought to be able to do so. Any citizen ought to be able to do so if he pays for it. And any candidate ought to be able to order it if he pays, the sample or a spot check for free. And you know, if there is a... Okay, so basically, we want to look at this paper trail. Duh. And the third thing is, if it discovers that there are errors, we need to disclose it and admit it. Again, these companies are they know that they've had huge errors in many cases, and they attribute them to their own software programming errors, but they don't disclose it when they make sales presentations. And the last thing is, the fourth thing is, if the machines make a mistake, do something to correct it. I've found many instances where the machines have handed the race to the wrong candidate, they've discovered it, and they don't ever give the race back to the right candidate. And the other aspect of that is, you find many situations where they found a whole bunch of machines that massively miscounted the race, and they don't go look at the machine. They'll say, oh, these 14 machines massively miscounted. Well, then look at the rest of the machines if you see that. So it's real simple. You just get a paper trail, look at the paper trail, disclose the errors, and correct the errors.
And who in King County would people go to demand these corrections?
We need to go all the way up the line. Certainly to the county commissioners, to the people who write the checks to buy the machines. And the biggest problem we have in Washington State is definitely at the Secretary of State's office. They've been, in my opinion, quite obstructive and quite cavalier about security precautions. There's three people there. Sam Reed is one of them. He's the Secretary of State in the Elections Office. There's a fellow named David Elliott and another named Paul Miller. You can read interviews with both of those people at my Black Box Voting website, and you'll see how lackadaisical they are about putting security around patches and how much they rely on these logic and accuracy tests instead of looking at, of insisting that people look at the code. And I think it's time that the voters simply say, we're not going to accept that. And in the counties like Snohomish, where we put in these machines that don't have a paper trail, send them back to the manufacturer. The manufacturer knew they had errors. They didn't disclose them. Let the manufacturer retrofit them with a paper trail. They're perfectly capable of doing that. By the way, I got an internal report from Diebold and ES&S, two of the big companies. Both of them right now have the capability to have all of their touchscreen machines print out a voter-verified paper trail. Now, my question is, then, why aren't they?
All right. Well, with that, we're unfortunately out of time. Good question to end on. Perhaps we can have you back and get the answer to that. Talking with Bev Harris, who is author of the upcoming book, Black Box Voting, Ballot Tampering in the 21st Century. And, Bev, how can people find out more about your book? Where can they get it?
Go to blackboxvoting.com. And you also find all kinds of things. If you've seen something wrong, there's a whistleblower page where you can report it. There's pages for programmers where they can provide input on some of the different files that have been found and so forth. It's kind of a fun site. We were called site of the day from somebody or other.
Now, do you have an email list that people can plug into to get, like, updates? Or
Yeah. All they have to do is pop into the site and email the email that's on that page.